1979 is the year the Iranian nation won a revolution. It was a momentous event that ended 2,500 years of monarchical rule. It was achieved via the determination of millions of people that, with their sheer numbers, dwarfed and defied a powerful military regime. A nation thirsty for self-determination and motivated by a faith that condemns tolerating oppression made a decision. A decision that brought about phenomenal change, unforeseen change. Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini was the leader of this movement. In a time when the world's titans were the Soviet Union and the United States, Khomeini defined the new Iran as neither Western nor Eastern, but an Islamic Republic. The people's almost unanimous vote for the new system signaled the end of an era, the end of Iran's subservience to the powers that be, and the birth of a system never before seen, an Islamic Republic. The Shah's regime was toppled by a nation with the slogan Independence, Freedom and Islamic Republic on their lips. Years have passed since the revolution, a period punctuated by assassinations, coups, an 8-year war, international sanctions, and all the hardships that come with getting a new system up and running despite all of that. In this program, we will be discussing the events of the last 3 decades and how far the Iranian nation has come. Before the Islamic Revolution, Iran was a dependent nation. The West had a say in all Iran's affairs, and Iran's resources flowed out unchecked. Numerous attempts to put a stop to this had been foiled via arrests, coup d'etats, and outright bully tactics. The nation had to rely on other countries for countless things, including medical treatment, consumer goods, and expertise. Hardly anything was produced domestically, from Iran's military equipment to the most base of products. Iran was of paramount geopolitical importance to Western nations, but the relationship can only be described as one-sided and parasitic. Thus the revolution.
First of all, Iran nominally was independent, but structurally and really, Iran didn't have the independence. That means the Iranian key foreign policy decision maker, that was the Shah at that time, before revolution, was dependent upon the policies and decisions of United States, in particular, and the West at large. So he always knew that he has to keep in mind who they are.
Finally, via the Islamic Revolution, the nation managed to wrestle Iran back from its so-called allies. The gravy train ground to a halt. The West was not happy.
Iran قبل از انقلاب با توجه به موقعیت ژئوپلیتیک و ژئواستراتژیک اون یکی از قرارگاه‌های مهم تأمین منافع غرب در این بخش حساس از جهان بود و با انقلاب اسلامی و برانداختن حکومت پهلوی خب این موقعیت و منافع غرب در این بخش از جهان آسیب دید و بنابراین به طور طبیعی اونها به مقابله با این انقلاب و نظام پس از اون یعنی جمهوری اسلامی می پرداختند و همچنان در این 33 سال هم به این مقابله و مخالفت ادامه می دهند.
After independence, the second thing the Iranian nation wanted to gain from the revolution was freedom of speech. With the help of Mossad and the CIA, the Shah created SAVAK, an intelligence and so-called security organization that used imaginative torture techniques to protect the monarchy's interests. The SAVAK controlled everything, from the media to the things whispered in coffee houses.
نقل می‌کنند که در یکی از جلسات وقتی که هیئت دولت پهلوی محمد رضا شاه بودند، یکی از وزرا ضمن این که طرح بحثی شده بود و می‌خواست مطلبی را اظهار بکنه، به طور گفتمانی همینطور در کلام و عبارت گفت: به نظر من مناسبه که این کار به این صورت انجام بشه. در همون جلسه شاه دستور داد از جلسه با خفت ایشون رو بیرون کردن و میگفت که در جلسه‌ای که من نشستم امکان این که شما واژه به نظر من را نباید به کار ببرید، در برابر نظر من نباید نظری ابراز بشه، حتی در سطح یک وزیر کابینه در جلسه‌ای برای بررسی کارشناسی امور. خب وقتی که در جلسات خصوصی امکان اظهار نظر به این صورت باشه، دیگه در عرصه مطبوعات معلوم تکلیفش چیه.
During the Shah's reign, the media was not allowed to criticize anyone remotely affiliated with the regime. In today's Iran, the media can criticize anyone and anything except Islam and the role of the leader.
امروز مطبوعات ما واقعا یکی از آزادترین مطبوعات هستند. ارکان مختلف نظام، بخش‌های مختلف نظام رو این مطبوعات به نرد میکشن. بعضیاش هم غیر منصفانه است، بعضیاش دروغه، بعضی از مطبوعات واقعا وابستگی دارن، عملکردشون داره اینو نشون میده. اما بنیان این نظام از اونجایی که بسیار محکمه و ریشه داره، تا الان جریان مطبوعاتی نتوانسته تأثیری بذاره.
That said, there are still Iranian journalists that are not happy with the level of freedom of speech in today's Iran either. For a casual outside observer of Iran's metamorphosis, the spirit of the revolution might not be all that tangible. But those who brought about the revolution and fought for its survival witnessed the transformation.
پیشرفتامون را هم باید بشناسیم.
On the 3rd of February 2012, during Friday prayers, the leader of the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, spoke of the revolution before and after.
ما خود کمبینی داشتیم، فکر میکردیم نه کار علمی از ما برمیاد، نه کار سیاسی از ما برمیاد، نه کار عظیم نظامی از ما برمیاد. فکر میکردیم که یک ملت ضعیفی هستیم. این رو به ما تلقین کرده بودند، تزریق کرده بودند. این رو از ملت گرفت انقلاب، به جای اون اعتماد به نفس ملی به ما داد. ما امروز در همه میدانها اعتماد به نفس داریم، میدانیم که میتوانیم و دنبال این توانستن حرکت میکنیم و همه جا هم به حمد الله به مقاصدمون میرسیم.
After the revolution, the people felt they had a new lease on life. But it was the youth of the nation that would have to make the revolution's goals a reality. Pre-revolution Iran was dependent on foreign countries for expertise. When the Shah was expelled, many foreign experts and companies up and left Iran, so Iran had to act and act fast. Education was the key. Since the revolution, Iran's literacy rate has gone from 47.5% to 84.6%. Before the revolution, Iran had 223 higher education centers. Today, that number has increased sevenfold to more than 1,500. Today, the country has 2,400,000 students studying in university at any one time. That's 20 times pre-revolution statistics. Back then, only 17,000 students were studying for their PhD. But today there are more than 120,000 PhD students in the country. In International Science Olympiads, Iran is among the top 10 nations. In 1979, Iranian youths knew they'd have to fill the shoes of foreign university professors, American military experts, British advisors and Bangladeshi doctors.
شاید بسیاری از مردم مسلمان ایران شاهد بودند که وقتی یک فرد مریض میشد میخواست یک پزشک مراجعه بکنه، پزشک یا هندی بود یا پزشک خارجی بود و پزشکی ایرانی کم وجود داشت و ما حتی پزشکای افغانی رو در اون زمان بعد از مهاجرت در ایران داشتیم که بسیاری از همین ایرانیا برای مداواشون پیش پزشک افغانی میرفتن. اما امروز بعد از 3 دهه الحمدلله جمهوری اسلامی ایران به خودکفایی کامل رسیده و نه تنها این که خودش نیاز به پزشک و متخصص و هیچ نوع مهندس خارجی نداره و خود به صورت مستقل میتونه تمامی امکانات خود رفع بکنه، نیازهای خود اشباع بکنه، حتی کشورهای همسایه را هم از این ناحیه بی‌نیاز ساخته.
Immediately we started to establish universities of medical sciences in every province. At least every province started having a university of medical sciences, and then some of the provinces even more than one. And within a limited number of years, we took more medical students to the point that at the present time we are quite self-sufficient. We've been self-sufficient for a number of years now, and we are able to cover every even deprived area, all of the villages.
Before the revolution, Iran's health system was practically non-existent. Rural and deprived areas had little or no access to health care. Only major cities like Tehran, Isfahan and Shiraz had hospitals. People in small cities and rural areas would have to travel long distances to get medical treatment. Only in the years after the revolution was a primary healthcare system established under the most difficult circumstances. During the Iran-Iraq War, healthcare was taken to rural areas and villages, and now today every corner of this vast country has access to healthcare. Children are vaccinated even in the most isolated areas.
It is not up to the villagers to come and get the services. If by any chance they forget or they neglect to come to get the services, our auxiliary healthcare workers called behvars, they go to their house and they inform them and they bring them for getting the services. That's why the immunization, which was about anywhere between 2 to 8% in the villages in those years, it within a number of years went up to 95 to 98, and at the present time it's 100% in the villages.
Before the revolution, the mortality rate of children under the age of 5 was high, about 173 in every 1,000. In recent years, that number has dropped to 20 out of every 1,000. In the year 1979, out of every 100,000 pregnant women, 230 would die during childbirth. 30 years later, that statistic has dropped 80%. Iran now has the world's third lowest maternal mortality rate. Iranian youths of today all remember loving aunts and uncles wishing them a career as doctor or engineer, two of the most vital and thus prestigious professions in Iran. Spurred on by many a doting parent, Iran has made leaps and bounds in the medical profession in the last 3 decades, making Iran a destination for medical tourism. Mr. Mostafa Ghanei, the Health Ministry's Deputy Head of Research and Technology, says, before the revolution, for the most simple treatment, we would have to go to an Indian doctor or travel abroad. But today, every year, 20,000 foreign patients come to Iran for treatment. They come from Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Tajikistan, India, and Pakistan. The procedures they come for are fertility treatment, dental work, plastic surgery, heart surgery, and cancer treatments. Iran ranks 19th in the world as far as medical science is concerned. Medicine is not the only field Iran has worked hard to advance itself in. In recent years, Iranian scientists have started focusing their energy and research on modern-day sciences like stem cell research. So far, the Royan Research Center has successfully cloned a sheep, goat, and cow. The goal is to find a treatment for stroke patients and antibodies for various diseases. Iran is one of the top 10 countries that produce and culture human embryonic stem cells. The Iranian government has invested heavily in nanotechnology. When Iran started its activity in this field, it lagged behind other countries, ranking 64th. But in less than 10 years, Iran has become number one in the Middle East region, second among Muslim countries, and 12th worldwide in nanotechnology. The country now has 2,000 nanotech experts and researchers, around 90 nanotech research centers, and 40 nanotech laboratories.
بانک توسعه اسلامی وقتی آمار فعالیت‌های نانو رو منتشر می‌کنه قریب به 50% آنچه در فناوری نانو در کشورهای اسلامی صورت گرفته فقط متعلق به ایرانه، یعنی کشوری مثل ترکیه حدود 13% رو داره. ما مدت هاست در این قسمت کشورهای منطقه، کشورهای اسلامی و کشورهای در واقع حتی کشوری مثل ترکیه رو پشت سر گذاشتیم و بر مبنای شاخصهایی که به شاخصهای بین المللی است مثل تعداد مقاله ما در سال 2011 رتبه 12 رو در دنیا به خودمون اختصاص دادیم. با بیش از 2700 مقاله ISI در واقع ما الان رقابتمون عمدتاً با اون 10 تا کشور اول دنیاست در این زمینه.
That said, the latest round of sanctions imposed on Iran threatened to hamper progress. Nanotechnology is to do with nanometric particles and needs very sophisticated equipment, most of which comes from abroad.
در حوزه فناوری نانو تجهیزات نقش مهمی دارن. شما اگه تجهیزات رو نداشته باشی نمیتونی در سطح مولکولی و اتمی که نانو در این قسمت داره کار میکنه کاری رو انجام بدی. باز خوشحالیم که همین در واقع تلاش هایی که جوانای مملکت، متخصصین مملکت با همه سختی ها و محدودیت هایی که داریم باعث شده که ما الان 28 تا از مهمترین تجهیزات مورد استفاده در فناوری نانو رو در خود کشورمون تولید کردیم و جالب هست تعدادی از اینا رو حتی به کشورهای دیگه صادر کردیم که نمونه از این محصولات محصولاتی است که گاهن آقای رئیس جمهور در سفرهای خارج کشورشون به رؤسای جمهور کشورهای دیگه هدیه میدن.
The scanning tunneling microscope is an instrument for imaging surfaces at the atomic level and manipulating individual atoms within materials. An Iranian company has manufactured the STM and is now exporting it to countries like Malaysia, Turkey, Brazil, and Indonesia. Iran's military might is another issue the country is working on. Tehran is trying to fortify the country as best possible, despite international sanctions that make it impossible for it to buy military hardware. As a result, a lot of Iran's arsenal is domestically manufactured. Among them, torpedoes, surface-to-surface, coast-to-sea, and shoulder missiles. On the 3rd of February 2012, Iran launched its third satellite, Navid-e-Elmosanat. It's 100% Iranian manufactured. The telecom measurement and scientific satellite is expected to orbit the Earth every 90 minutes and send images back to ground stations. Iran's first satellite was Omid, that was launched on the 2nd of February 2009. And the second was Rasad 1, launched on the 15th of June 2011. Not so long ago, an Iranian satellite in space might have been something no one could have thought possible. And of course, one of Iran's most controversial scientific achievements is its nuclear energy program, which has plowed ahead despite international opposition. Iran has enriched uranium up to 20% for its Tehran research reactor. The Islamic Republic has been slapped with 4 rounds of UN sanctions, and recently the EU has boycotted Iranian oil over its nuclear energy program. The US and its allies demand Iran halt uranium enrichment until they are satisfied Tehran is not seeking nuclear weapons. Iran denies these accusations and, while allowing numerous IAEA inspections, refuses to halt its nuclear program, insisting it's for peaceful purposes only. 4 Iranian nuclear scientists have been assassinated in the last 2 years, which Iran blames on the United States and Israel.
همه این پیشرفت‌های علمی و اجتماعی و فنی در شرایط تحریم اتفاق افتاده است. این خیلی مهمه. دروازه‌های علم را، دروازه‌های فناوری را بر روی ما بستند، راه‌ها را مسدود کردند، محصولات مورد نیاز ما را به ما نفروختند و ما اینجور پیشرفت کردیم. در شرایط تحریم این اتفاق افتاده است. اینه که امیدها افزایش پیدا میکنه.
Iran's Islamic Revolution is described as an unprecedented event because of a million-strong protest that brought down a military regime. Political analysts of the time were left scratching their heads, and global powers caught off guard when the Shah left and the Iranian nation began to celebrate victory. The whole dynamics of the region changed forever. 30 years later, other autocratic regimes in northern Africa and the Middle East have toppled like dominoes. Iran's revolution was inspired by Islamic teachings that encouraged the oppressed to rise against tyranny. This Islamic spirit can also be witnessed in countries like Tunisia, Egypt, Yemen, and Libya that have now overthrown their totalitarian rulers.
انقلاب اسلامی ایران انقلاب خاص و مختص اسلامی و برای خود مردم ایران نبود، بلکه جنبش مستضعفین بود و حرکتی که امام رحمت الله علیه آغاز کردن در همون اوایل ما شنیدیم که ایشان گفتن که دعای فرمودن که امیدوارم که این قرن انشاءالله با حول قوه الهی قرن غلبه مستضعفین بر مستکبرین باشه. با توجه به این موضوع من فکر میکنم که اون دعا مستجاب شده و امروز این حرکتی که جمهوری اسلامی ایران بر علیه طاغوت انجام داد و اختصاص به مسائل دینی و مذهبی هم نداشت، گرچه معنویت ها ارزشمند بود و انقلاب بیمه کرد، اما برای همه مستضعفین، برای رهایی همه کسانی که زیر یوغ استکبار بودن، حرکت و تلاش صورت گرفت و امروز ما شاهد اثرگذاری مستقیم این انقلاب بر کشورهای حتی غیر مسلمان و غیر اسلامی هستیم.
Iran is living proof that a nation can change its stars, can swing things around. This the nations now in upheaval have experienced for themselves. They too have overcome years of oppression and hegemony. It remains to be seen whether they will manage to keep up their momentum. It will be no easy task, especially if true independence is what these nations seek. But Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says sanctions have made Iran stronger.
از روز اول قدرت‌های مجهز جهانی، مسلطین جهانی با ما کار داشتن، بنای بر اذیت گذاشتن، بنای بر مانع تراشی گذاشتن، علیه ما جنگ تحمیل کردن، صدام رو به جان ما انداختن، 8 سال ما رو گرفتار کردن، تروریست آوردن، تحریم کردن. اینجوری بوده است. ما بر همه این چالش ها تا امروز غلبه پیدا کردیم، یعنی هیچ کدام از این چالش ها نتوانسته است ملت ما را و انقلاب ما را پشیمان کند، به زانو در بیاورد. ما راهمون رو با قامت استوار به حمدالله ادامه دادیم. این مهمترین نقطه قوت ماست.